Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Welcome to All Paws Pet Talk Ask the Vets. My name is Karen Watts, also known as Karen at PetOfTheDay.com or Karen at CatOfTheDay.com or Karen at DogOfTheDay.com, depending on whether you're a dog person, a cat person, or an every kind of pet under the sun person. And we have with us today our regular Dr. Carol Osborne.
Hello.
And we have Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald. Welcome back, Dr. Kevin.
Good day. How are you?
I am fine. Here in the today it's sunny northeast of the country. You know, today my first question is from someone all the way on the other side of the country from me. Tracy is in Santa Clara, California, and her cat Ziggy Stardust is longish hair, pretty cat with two color eyes and just a beloved girl and usually pretty healthy. She's 7 years old. She was at the groomers, and they always check the animal's anal glands. She's been checked before and never had any problems. This time, they said she had a small problem with her anal glands. I guess when they squeezed them, some stuff came out. Tracy's question is, how do I keep her from having any more problems with them? She'll be 7 years old in June, so she's not even a senior cat yet. I feed her both canned and dry food, both of which are grain-free.
You know, anal gland problems are a very common issue in dogs and cats today, especially because of the processed foods that they're consuming. I recommend just adding a little bit of grape fiber. Fresh vegetables are wonderful for dogs and cats. It adds a little bit of fiber to the stool, and it helps to empty or clear those anal glands each time the animal defecates. With cats, shredded zucchini, asparagus tips, a little bit of corn. There are several things that cats will eat as far as fresh vegetables. You have to play with it a little bit at home, but that's an easy, tasty, and a healthy way to try to keep anal gland issues to a minimum.
And Dr. Kevin,
as usual, Dr. Carol's right on the money. You know, dogs and cats have glands on either side of the anus, on either side of the rectum, that play a role on in scent marking and pack recognition in dogs and individual recognition. And they get gummed up as they get older. I think as animals get older, the muscles that usually would squeeze them out as they defecate would and this stuff isn't feces, it's this smelly stuff. It does play a role in individual recognitions, and so they use it for behavioral things and then release them when they're afraid. But as they get older, the muscles, I think, get a little bit more lax. And so adding a little bit of fiber is a great thing. And like us, you know, like people, our pets probably don't get enough natural fiber. And in domestication has hurt them that way. So, you know, with my own cat, I give a little bit of pumpkin pie filling a couple times a week to help with it, you know, and have to tablespoon on top of the food, but also telling your groomer to check them frequently and having your veterinarian check them when you go is a good way to go.
You know, that's a great point, Dr. Kevin. In addition to that, when you're at the groomer with a dog or a cat, they normally express the anal glands externally, which is something a pet owner can learn to do as well. At the veterinarians, right, we normally express them internally with a glove using our fingers, which empties them out, you know, 100%. So that's something that, you know, pet owners can mention to their veterinarians.
Excellent. Okay, now I have another sort of, it's spring up here in New England. I know there are some parts of the country that haven't quite gotten their spring yet. I have some friends in the upper Midwest who are getting snow and really upset about that. But This is from Lisa in Lexington, Massachusetts. My neighbors had a landscaper come and they just put down mulch in several flower beds and under trees in their yard, which my dog will sniff when we're on walks. Someone at work told me mulch is bad for dogs. Is this true? He's a lab mix, so usually he'll pick up a stick or anything else available to carry in his mouth. So should I worry about him picking up any of the bigger pieces of mulch or anything?
You know, generally mulch isn't a lot to worry about, but they do make something called cocoa mulch, which actually contains cocoa or chocolate, if you will, the toxic component being theobromine. So if it's cocoa mulch, yeah, beware, because that can cause illness in dogs and cats. Other kinds of mulches, to the best of my knowledge, are safe.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think you should know, you know, what it is. So many times people, even with houseplants, they don't even know what type of houseplants they have in their own house. They come to Dr. Carroll and myself with a handful of chewed up leaves and go, you know what this is? And you know, we're not botanists. You know, we don't know what it is. And so the mulches, I find it depends what it's made of, and it depends how it's processed, and it depends how wet it gets. Mulches can be bad if fungus in fungal blooms have grown in it, you know, and that can be tough on them. The other thing too, like she said, if it is made from cocoa beans, and so, you know, it's got the theobromine from, you know, from chocolate in that. We've even seen horses here in Colorado that get into cocoa bean mulch and will get intoxicated from the theobromine. The other thing that we've seen here is we've seen some mulches with cow blood, and the dogs will certainly be attracted to that. And so there's a specific one that is an aphid killer, where it's a mulch with cow blood with organophosphate in it that's put around rose bushes. And this one is specific for aphids that are on the rose bushes, and dogs will eat that and become intoxicated with the organophosphate. So I think we need to know what we're putting down. I think we need to let the air get to it and water it, you know, and see. And I think we need to pay attention to what our dogs are doing on walks and when they're unsupervised.
You know, I used to work at a place that had a poodle puppy who came to work, and I ended up training all the other staff people. This was an ad agency. It was not a dog groomer or anything, that when you took Lily out, it was up to you to find a decent stick for her to carry, or else she'd find the most disgusting thing, because our office was behind a shopping mall. So, you know, she'd find half of a cigar or other disgusting things to carry. And a lot of the retrieving breeds, as long as they have something in their mouth, they're happy. But if you want it to be something safe, it's kind of up to the human being to find something. You know, folks, we are running out of time for this segment. Will you both stick with me? We have a lot more to talk about. We'll be right back with more All Paws Pet Talk Ask the Vets.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health, and just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy, and the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo, to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be Healthy Goo, healthy.
Pet Talk, Ask the Vets. Now, I have a question from Justin in Pennsylvania. He has a bird. His happens to be a macaw, but I think this is common probably to any bird species in that his macaw fell. Baby is a bit of a clumsy bird at this point in her life. She's kind of young. And she broke the tip off of her beak, and it was bleeding a lot. He heard that styptic powder can be bad for birds, so I tried packing it with flour and putting pressure on it. That didn't stop it, and it was bleeding so much, and I was worried about her getting stressed out. So he grabbed his avian care handbook and ended up cauterizing it. It was scarier for him than for the bird. But is styptic powder okay for birds or not? Somebody else said KN powder. Or what could a bird owner use in an emergency situation like this?
Well, Dr. Well, Kevin, I'm going to just shoot that one right to you.
Yeah, no, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with styptic powder as long as how much you use and it doesn't get in the eyes and mouth. So I think we need to, you know, show considerable, you know, care when we apply it, but it does work. There's nothing wrong with using an ice cube, though, to stop those vessels. You know, direct pressure, you can't underestimate direct pressure, although a lot of birds won't let you apply it. But a little bit of ice, styptic pencil, or there are the different coagulant powders that we use for doing toenails in dogs and cats, but you just have to be very careful with these things to not get it in the eye and see how much we get in the mouth.
Oh, okay. So I wonder why, you know, why someone would have told him that styptic was bad for birds, especially with a bird like a macaw. You know, they have a pretty large beak, and so it would be kind of hard to get it in the eye if you were working on the end of the beak. And will a beak
if they're struggling, though, it'd be tough, you know. And so, you know, I think you have to be careful.
Yeah, now, as a non-bird owner, will the tip of the beak regrow like that? And I know some people have to trim beaks. Do beaks constantly grow? I just don't know that.
It's like a fingernail, you know, and so there's a living portion of the beak that has blood vessels, and then there's the dead, horny part that you know, is like fingernail material, and, you know, just keratin.
Okay. Thank you. That clears that up. Now, we've been talking about the fact that it is spring, and spring means ticks. Now, previously on the show, we have talked about ticks in the case of dogs, but I have questions this week from horse owners and goat owners. So, Dr. Kevin, I'm going to send the horse one to you. Jay is in Kentucky, not Colorado, but he said, I know it's going to be a bad year for ticks. My horses are covered. I pulled 30 off of them last night. I had 10 on me just walking back to the lot to feed them. What is anyone doing to keep them off? Is there anything one can give a horse to combat ticks? Is there anything you can put in the feed? Or, and this part is for me, is there anything topical you can do for a horse? I mean, you know, we put topicals on dogs sometimes, but, you know, you'd need a whole lot more for a horse than compared to a dog.
Well, I'm a poor but honest small animal veterinarian, but I have friends who have horses, and there are medications that you can give, both topically and spot-ons and sprays. So I think that there's a lot we can do. The problem with a horse is how many ticks can worry the animal and how much blood that they can actually take. And so, you know, they can have hundreds of ticks, you know, if not thousands, you know, in different parts of the United States, you know, with the right weather conditions. So I think that checking them frequently. But the main thing is, I think, having a good equine veterinarian and seeing the horse's age and size and what's the right medication for you. Okay?
Okay. And Dr. Carroll, did you have anything to add to that?
Absolutely. You know, the ticks are a big problem, particularly in horses that live out in the pasture. Severe infestations lead to anemia, appetite loss, as well as depression. Ticks can infect any type of a horse or horse owner with Lyme's disease, ehrlichiosis, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, as well as tick bite paralysis. Again, as Dr. Kevin wisely said, you know, talk to your veterinarian, make sure that you buy a product specifically made for horses, you know, and again, you know, run it by your vet just to be sure. And you might want to be interested in the fact that if you keep a flock of guinea fowl or free range chickens around, feathered barnyard marauders consider ticks the pinnacle of out cuisine. So they can dine on their eggs, and keeping some free-range chickens or a few guinea fowl around, maybe they'll gobble up the ticks and keep your horses tick-free.
Now, my next question is also a tick question. This is the time of year for them. And this is from Danny, a lady in North Carolina, who has goats. Is there anything she can feed her goats or put on her goats to discourage ticks? She's concerned about feeding them anything because one is a nursing doe, and she also has goats that she uses for milk, not meat goats. They're milk goats. So she wouldn't want anything that might affect the milk product in either case of the nursing doe or the goat that she's milking.
You know, generally when an animal is pregnant, the last thing you want to do is give them anything, you know, from a vaccination to a tick product, you know, anything that might interfere with the new fetus. So in a pregnant goat, again, talking to your veterinarian, and if you've got to use something, be sure that it's natural and safe so that you don't affect, you know, the little fetus inside. With respect to goats that aren't pregnant, certainly once again, talk to your vet and use products that are safe and recommended for tick prevention, you know, in the goat species.
Dr. Kevin, did you have
some? So many of these products can, you know, pass the placenta to the baby and also pass into the milk. So, you know, what Dr. Carroll said is right on the money. You know, we want to be careful. And, you know, every morning we get up and we say, first, do no harm. You know, we can't always help them, but we can sure hurt them, and we don't want to hurt a baby that's developing, a little embryo that might get some of these things that can act as a something to cause mutations or any problem. And so we want to be safe. And so for pregnant or nursing animals, we might go to some of the older ways that are more gentle, just topicals and different baths and things that really don't get into her system.
Okay, and is there anything, I know people who feed their dogs some garlic in their food, just a little bit of garlic in their food, and say that combats ticks. Is that something you can do with a ruminant, like a goat or a horse?
You know, Karen, the reality behind feeding garlic every day to your dogs and cats is pretty much like feeding brewer's yeast or B vitamins. It's a great theory, and it is an effective theory in species like humans that actually sweat or perspire. Dogs and cats have very underdeveloped sweat glands in their foot pads, which is why when a dog or cat gets overheated or a bit warm, they have to open their mouth and actually pant to cool down or to lose that excess heat. So garlic fed every day to dogs and cats can lead to anemia or a loss of red blood cells, which is not going to be very good for your pet. In addition, it doesn't do a darn thing to get rid of fleas, ticks, or anything else.
They should plant a potato in the backyard to get rid of the ticks. I mean, you'd be doing just as much good. Yeah, there's been a lot of studies done on the efficacy of garlic.
Yeah, that's one of the oldest wives' tales.
You're not going to hurt them. You're not going to hurt them by doing it. But you know, it's There's a lot of bad info, you know, and that's why it's so important to have a good relationship. Your veterinarian's as far away as the telephone and is happy to talk to you. He or she is more than happy to get you on the right track and to not do, you know, that's an urban myth, okay? I think, you know, that gets under myth for me. And so... you know.
And that's one thing we can do here on the radio show is help dispel some of those myths. You know, docs or vets, should I say, we are just about out of time for this segment. We'll be right back with more All Paws Pet Talk, Ask the Vets.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike Toe Leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Back to All Paws Pet Talk, Ask the Vets. You know, we were just talking about, Dr. Kevin, you mentioned that the garlic against ticks is, you know, just as effective as planting a potato in the backyard. And that's one of those urban legends that you hear around, urban myths that you hear around all the time. And because we have a radio show that goes all over the country, are there other urban legends that you as veterinarians would wish to clear up for people that you know that are out there?
Well, I think there's all kinds of legends.
The biggest one for me is that a dog or a cat's mouth is cleaner than a human. You know? And it just ain't so. And so that's why, you know, cats groom themselves all day long, and they're meticulous groomers and very fastidious. So we get bacteria, fecal bacteria, and, growing in the mouth. And so that's, cat bites are very serious, and cat scratches, and the same with dog bites. And so I think that there's a lot of things that I hear. You know, when you go to a cocktail party and you're a veterinarian, people come and sit by you and ask you questions. You know, you should probably just tell people that, you know, you do some other profession that nobody wants to sit with you. But we're duty bound to educate, and that's why your show is so great. And so it gently tells people the right thing. You know, there's no hype or no. We're not here to push any specific products or anything. We're just here to get to the truth. Everybody wants the same thing. They want good care. But when we hear things like, you know, well, I've been given garlic, you know, rather than given effective medications. Many of the diseases victimize the families and particularly the animals. And so they've been victimized once by getting the disease. Let's not victimize them twice by using, you know, some type of medication that isn't effective. The FDA gets a lot of grief, but you know what? They protect us and make sure that medications we use are safe and effective. Okay.
And so, you know, whole dog bite being safer than being a dog mouth being cleaner than a human mouth, I remember that as a child. The girl across the street, when I fell and scraped my knee, as kids will do, and especially klutzes like me, and she said, oh, have your dog lick it. A dog's mouth is cleaner than a human mouth. And I thought that was the silliest thing I'd ever heard. So I'm glad to get that information out there from a real veterinarian.
I remember being 5 years old, and my parents were Irish immigrants, and to my father, the dog was a hero and could live in the house and be with us. And the cat lived outside and could never come in. We fed him outside. We take the dog to the vet, but I never remember taking the poor cat to the veterinarian, Snowball. And one day, Snowball had this big cat fight abscess on the top of his head. I ran in, I was 5 or 6, and told my father, Dad, Snowball's got something on the top of his head. He goes, well, you know, cats have a special saliva, like, and he'll, like, lick the top of his head. And I was, you know, 5 years old, well, he can't lick the top of his head. I'm five, but I'm not an idiot. But I think that, yes, there are myths and urban legends and just bad info about dogs, you know. And, you know, things you hear, like, you know, well, if he's walking on it, it must not be broken. You know, how many times have you heard that, Dr. Carroll? And so, or if he's not using it, it must be broken. And so, you know, we don't have radiographic eyes. We don't have x-ray eyes. And so, you know, getting a good film and doing a good physical exam and really seeing is so much better than just, you know, going through to one of these old saws that really don't have any basis either in fact or science.
Oh, and I wanted to report to both of you, I want to interject here, that my brother's dog is now no longer bearing the nickname of Stinkerella. With half a can of Beano before she eats, she is allowed on the couch just like every other member of the family. So everyone in my brother's household would like to thank you both for that recommendation for their dog. And, you know, today's dog of the day is a pit bull who her owner said in the last sentence of the story about why she's special that her nickname is Stinky. And it's okay. She doesn't mind that. She just thinks it's another one of her names. But I wonder if that's, you know, just something that everybody should know about who has a dog.
You know, I think the biggest thing there is, Karen, is if you've got gas, loose stool, indigestion, you know, instead of continuing to feed your pet the same food so that the same problems occur over and over, that's just a simple sign that that particular food doesn't agree with that particular pet. It might be like you or I. Mexican food might agree with you, and I might love Mexican food, but after I eat Mexican food, I spend the night in the restroom. So if you have a pet and you have a food, no matter what it might be, and your pet is stinky or has a lot of gas and indigestion, once again, consider, you know, talking to your veterinarian and finding a food that agrees with your pet and that doesn't cause those adverse type of signs.
That's right. There's a tremendous individual variation too, I think, between, you know, what they can eat and what it produces, and I think also the quality of the food and what they're eating too. So I think it's a combo, but I think through good trial and error and with the help of a good professional, your veterinarian is a good friend that way.
The other thing to keep in mind is if you do have a food that doesn't agree with your pet, you know, if your pet's been on antibiotics under anesthesia or been ill, you know, for whatever reason, you know, consider a 30 to 60 day course of probiotics. Those are those good friendly lactobacillus bacteria that replace the bad gas forming bacteria in the colon and then allow the food to be absorbed into the cells and utilized properly, you know, as opposed to just producing more gas.
Well, I know with their previous dog, Lady, who is now up at the Rainbow Bridge, anything ham, Lady adored. But if you shared ham with Lady, your nostrils would smell the consequences. But with Angel, it didn't matter what she was eating. And she was perfectly happy about it, but nobody else sitting on the couch with her was. And that's something, I guess, that is common with a lot of Pitbull or Angel is part boxer, part bulldog. And we were talking about the dogs with the smushed faces tend to get in a lot more air when they eat. So that contributes to it as well, right?
That's right. They do a lot of aerophagia. And you watch an English bulldog, you know, as he breathes, just he's taking down these great drafts of air, and it has to go somewhere, and it ends up in the stomach, and it goes out one way. So, you know, it's unfortunate for the owner, but I think that, you know, with different things that you can try, you can't totally eliminate it, but you can get it down to a dull roar, if you will.
And that's something that every breed has its own things that you have to learn to deal with. There was a commercial on the television I saw the other night, and I don't remember what the commercial is for, but it featured a Newfoundland, and dealing with drool is something that you have to deal with if you get a Newfie. And it showed the couple getting this little bitty puppy that wasn't drooling at all, but, you know, glancing over and seeing the mother with a big strand of drool running out of her mouth, you know, it's something you need to do some research and be aware of good and bad characteristics of the breed. I have never run into a breed book out there yet that counts drool factor or noxious emissions tendencies.
Well, you said a mouthful. If people would just do a little bit of research, a little bit of homework before, you know, so many times people will end up with, you know, one of the northern huskies or you know, the northern breeds, and you go, wow, he's so vocal. He wants to talk all the time. And if they just would have talked to breeders or people that have them or to their veterinarian, you know, I've got, you know, this retriever, he wants to carry things in his mouth. I've got this dog that is you know, he's constantly moving. He's this Jack Russell, and he's, you know, his idol set too high. That's what this guy said about this one, this one Jack Russell. Well, I mean, so there are breed idiosyncrasies in behavior and anatomy, and people need to be aware of them.
And, you know, folks, we are just about out of time for this segment, and I have a good discussion point coming up for our next segment. Folks, we will be right back with more of All Paws Pet Talk, Ask the Vets.
Hey, pet lovers, please listen up. I want to introduce to you Nature's Logic, the most natural full-line pet food ever made, and here's why. Nature's Logic is made with a variety of high-quality proteins, such as beef, chicken, lamb, and venison. You will never find any synthetic vitamins, minerals, or anything else synthetic in Nature's Logic. Only real nutritional foods, such as dried blueberries, apples, carrots, cranberries, spinach, and almonds. Foods loaded with natural vitamins and minerals, as made by nature, not a chemist. Nature's Logic is committed to providing the highest quality and safest nutrition for the furry members of your family. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit the Nature's Logic website at naturslogic.com and find a store near you. Nature's Logic can be found in many independent stores throughout Colorado, New Mexico, and Wyoming. So, do your pets a favor and start feeding them Nature's Logic and treat them to the very best. Nature's Logic is truly 100% natural, the way pet foods should be.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Back to All Paws Pet Talk, Ask the Vets. Now, this is one where, you know, normally I will email the vets ahead of time, but this is a subject that comes up time after time, year after year, and in this case, it's the North Carolina legislature is trying to pass a bill to restrict ownership of several breeds of dog that they have classified as aggressive dogs, and they are listing the following breeds in their mixes: Rottweiler, Mastiff, Chow, Prussicanaria, Wolf Hybrid, Pit Bull, which is defined as Staffordshire Bull Terrier, American Staffordshire Terrier, and American Pit Bull Terrier. And the person who wrote this bill says he derived this list based off dogs that insurance companies restrict. Now, I personally, as a, you know, the person who has one of the founders and runners of dogoftheday.com, I believe that all breed-specific legislation is, I can't put this impartially, just wrong. My state in Massachusetts, Boston Strong folks, we have a ban on any breed-specific legislation. And I wonder what you guys think. I know you're in Colorado, Dr. Kevin, and you're in Ohio, Dr. Carroll.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just said yes.
What do you think about breed-specific legislation, and what would you tell people who are in favor of it?
Aggressive dogs, dog bites, injuries to children and other people are a very serious issue. In Ohio, we do have breed-specific legislation, basically, that requires pet owners that do possess one of the breeds in the list that you just mentioned are required to have an addendum insurance policy on their home. I believe it's for $100,000, and that's so that should their dog, you know, have an incident or an encounter with someone, that they don't lose their house, you know, during the course of litigation. So I think that if you are considering, you know, a breed of this nature, again, as Dr. Kevin mentioned, do your homework, know what you are getting into, make sure that you're equipped to handle that, and that your insurance policies are up to date so that you have a good long-lasting relationship with the dog and you don't, you know, run into legal issues.
You said it very well. I live in Denver, and we have a breed ban here on pit bulls. Several municipalities here in Colorado have them. And I'm not a fan of breed bans. I think that the onus of dog ownership should be on the owner. And I think that the owner should be responsible. And by responsible, I mean that I think all dogs should have obedience training. I think all dogs should, fences make good neighbors. I think all dogs should, no dog should be left for hours on a chain. I was on the vicious dog liaison for the veterinary community here with the city council. And the bites were the same thing. They were toddlers getting away from the mom for a few minutes and going up to a dog on a chain. And, you know, there are dogs that were bred for different purposes. And so we do see aggression in certain breeds that we don't see in others. And so, but I think that the onus of dog ownership should be on the owner and not the dog. And I think he's be responsible. Our problem here is that the rules, the laws, the ordinances, and we have so many ordinances for dogs here in Colorado, you know, 47 in the city of Denver, from nuisance dog barking to running at large to, you know, diseases. And so, but they really don't have any teeth, you know, and they're not enforced. And so I think that dog bites are very serious. We think that with the AVMA study on dog bites found that, 1% of emergency room visits in the United States for people are animal bites. And these are 65 to 70% dog bites, more than cats or exotics or other animals. So, you know, it's a problem. It's a problem. And I think that, it's a privilege to have a dog. It's not your right. And I think that if we see chronically again and again the same people involved in problems, then there should be actions taken. There should be addendums to insurance, but for all dogs, I think, you know, to protect against a dog. Because if we look at the statistics, with 143 breeds that are recognized by the AKC, every dog last year, every breed was involved in at least one bite, which tells us any dog can bite. Now, some breeds involved more, and some breeds that, you know, pit bulls weren't even in the top 10 biting breeds, but when they were involved, it was a 27% higher medical charges, you know, cost. So I think that, you know, you'd be surprised. You know, poodles are number 5, but I think everybody's grandparents had a poodle under the couch, and the grandchildren go over, and they try and get Pierre to come out and grab him by the head, and he nips him, so... You know, but bites are serious, you know, because of infection and because of the nature of a bite and because who is being bitten. If we look at 70% of those bitten are under 21 and 70% of those under 21 are under 6. So we don't do enough as a veterinary society and as a society in general to teach children how to approach dogs they don't know. Children get lulled to sleep by their own dog and think that every dog is safe and they can play with it. But they go down and they put their face right up to him and they smile and bare their teeth. And that's an aggressive display to the dog. And so he doesn't understand it. Wow, that guy's, you know, snarling at me. So children, for adults, more than 75% are bitten on the extremities. But for children, more than 75% are bitten on the face. So it's
and
a
you
phenomenon
know, Dr.
Children,
Kevin, I can yes. attest to that because I have a scar on my own lip. I, Karen at Dog of the Day, was bitten in the face by a dog when I was a small child, and I was 4 years old, and the neighbor's dog came over, and I walked right up to him, and he was a nervous little terrier mix. Now, in retrospect, I remember that. And so I walked right up to him and hugged him like I hugged my own dog, And I was so surprised when he bit me. And I remember my mother, you know, wiping the blood off my lip because I was crying, because I was just, it wasn't so much that it hurt, but because my feelings were hurt that this dog bit me. And my mother explaining to me very patiently that, you know, Reggie thought you were trying to squeeze him to death. You can't hug strange dogs. Don't stick your face in the face of a strange dog.
No, we need to do better. We need to do better. You know, teach children, you know, to not turn and run from a dog, too, that elicits a chase reflex in these animals, you know. And to realize, you know, the biggest thing I've learned in 31 years of working with dogs, I love dogs, and I have a dog, and I make my living off of my own dog is my vice president. But you know what? They're not little people. They're animals. And cues that mean something to us don't mean things to them. Things that mean things to them, we don't recognize. And so I think we need to teach children about body English in a dog, and, you know, when a dog is staring at them, or when a dog has his head and tail erect, you know, and is standing on his ground, you know. If we look at bites, 88% of bites are in the dog's home turf. You know, so it's not a function of dogs running at large and nipping people. The other thing that we're having here in Colorado with a outbreak of bites is children reaching into cars in parking lots. You know, at the supermarket, the dog's got his head out the window, and, you know, oh, look at him, and they touch, you know, and the dog's protecting his own territory. He sees the car as part of his own territory, and so I think we need to do better in teaching children, you know, because that's who's being bitten. That workmen too, you know, we see delivery people and mail carriers and people that are going up to houses. But it's the dog's own territory. They're a territorial animal and they're protecting the hearth and home.
That's right.
We need
you know,
to do better.
We are out of time, Dr. Kevin. We will be right back with more of All Paws Pet Talk Ask the Vet.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo, healthy.
To All Paws Pet Talk Ask the Vets. You know, before we run out of time, which we do all, you know, we get talking and time just flies away from us. I want to tell everyone that the website for our radio show is allpaws, P-A-W-S, pettalk.com. And if you have any questions for Dr. Kevin or Dr. Carol or me or anyone you hear on All Paws Pet Talk, there's a form right there on the homepage. Scroll down and you can either pick who you want the question to go to if you tend to like Dr. Carol's opinions more than Dr. Kevin's or, you know, whatever, or the producer can direct it to the person who will best answer the question. Now, we were just talking about breed-specific legislation, but more about training children and about dog bites. Now, Dr. Carol, I know you wanted to weigh in on that.
Absolutely. You know, everything that Dr. Kevin said was just absolutely 100% correct. And with respect to worrying about the aggressive dogs, you know, the Rotties, the Mastiff, the Chows, the Pitbulls, yes, those are breeds that come with a reputation. But as far as where do the majority of children experience dog bites, again, right in their living room. And is it the Pitbull or the Chow or the Mastiff? No. It's the Cocker Spaniel first, and it's the Dalmatian second. So, again, yes, breed-specific legislation is in my opinion, something that's very good and very helpful to help keep pet owners on the right track and to protect everyone, but keep aware of the fact that the teaching children how, when, and where to handle dogs is absolutely critical. Again, that's a parental responsibility, not the child's responsibility, and teaching those lessons and being on your toes, observing your children with these particular pets is the single simplest, safest way to prevent your child from becoming a dog bite victim.
And you were mentioning, Dr. Kevin, that most of the bites are bites to people, you know, under a certain age. And so I think I know that there are people who, children growing up with no pets whatsoever. And I think it's still important for, even if you're growing up, I know when my own niece was maybe 5 years old, she came over to my house and we asked her if she wanted to pat my rabbit. And she said no, because she was terrified of the bunny, because it turned out she had no pets in her own house and her babysitter had a cat that scratched her. So it's all familiarizing children with...
That's right. We're afraid of what we don't know, right? And you know, and a lot of fear comes from ignorance. So I think, you know, it would be so great if, you know, that each school system had, you know, a basic course and some type of instruction for young people, you know, children, to, you know, man, how do we approach a dog we don't know? Do we put our face down and have them role play and do the things that are wrong? And it would go for other animals too, with cats and with bunnies. And we do see a lot of people that are horribly afraid of dogs or of cats. But there are people that have never had one, and there are people that don't know them, and we're afraid of what we don't know.
And, you know, yeah. I find that a lot of that, if a parent is afraid, there's something that they have to realize that their fear, whether or not it's logical, they're going to pass that on to their child or not. And I know a woman who is terrified of dogs. She was actually chased and attacked by a neighbor's dog when she was a child, and so made a big effort for her daughter to get her daughter acquainted with dogs so that she wouldn't have that fear, because she, you know, she knew that her own life was affected by her extreme fear of dogs and didn't want that for her children.
It's also important.
That's right. Go ahead.
It's also important to realize that whether you're a child, an adult, you know, a lay person or a veterinarian, if you are afraid of the particular animal in question, remember that animals sense things a lot more accurately than you and I, through pheromones and through their sixth scent, if you will. So, for example, if you're a veterinarian and there's a, you know, a big chow or a rotty waiting for you in the next room, and you have apprehension about that, remember that that dog will know that you are afraid of him or her before you even walk in that room, at which point you've already lost the game. So it's important to, you know what you know and know what you don't know. Seek a higher authority, or, you know, proper information for your own safety as well as for the safety of your children. And before you go out there and buy yourself a pet, you know, do your homework. Don't buy on impulse. Think about all the things that are considered, and then be sure that you choose a pet appropriate for yourself or with your child, if you will. And that will help to avoid a lot of unfortunate consequences from getting bitten to simply relinquishing a pet, you know, because of situations that occur that we don't think of, you know, right off the bat.
And Dr. Kevin,
You couldn't have said that better. You know, no impulse buys. These are living creatures that, you know, can live for 12, 15, 16 longer, and you know, years and longer. And so, boy, you know, we're going to make sure we've got enough time for them, we've got the right home, we're going to understand everything it's going to take. This is a commitment. You know, it's like I said, it's a privilege to have a pet. It's not just your right, you know, and it's a real commitment and a contract we have with them that, all right, I'm going to take you home, but I'm going to take care of you. And the number one reason people give up animals are behavioral problems, or that they didn't understand, you know, how long it was going to take or how much it was going to take to care for this animal.
And in addition to all those factors, consider the cost factor before you buy a pet. Make sure that it fits, you know, what your economic status currently is. I'm often, you know, seeing people and they'll walk in the door with a huge dog all full of fur, and then when they ask the cost of something, you know, that they're shocked or astonished. Remember, the bigger your pet is and the more fur he or her may have, the more they're going to cost to medicate, to groom, to feed. You know, everything goes up as the pounds increase. So, you know, don't buy on impulse. Do your homework and make a decision that's responsible, that you can live with, afford, and take care of for the next 15-plus years of your life as an additional family member.
And, you know, as part of All Paws Pet Talk, we are very much into animal rescue. And if you get a dog from a rescue situation, often that dog, the people who have been fostering that dog or taking care of that dog, will know things like not only how much he eats, but how much he sheds, and whether, you know, whether it's good with cats or dogs or other children. So that's another reason to just go with the rescue route instead of getting a dog from a pet store or from someone that you're not sure of the dog's background, because you can know so much more about a pet in that situation. You know, folks, we are just about running out of time this week. Is there any last bit you wanted to add in, Dr. Kevin? I know I cut you off.
No, it's great. This is a wonderful forum, and you're doing a great thing. Dr. Carol's so knowledgeable, and it's good we're getting the right info out. So the main thing we got to do this weekend, it's nicer weather, get out there and enjoy your animals.
That's right. And you know, check yourself for ticks as well as your dogs. They're out there, but they don't have to come into your home. We will be back next week with more of All Paws Pet Talk, Ask the Vets. Thanks, everyone.